Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
A quick note on news we're keeping an eye on. A House panel is expected to vote later today to change military law so that commanding officers won't be able to modify or throw out court martials or sexual assault offenders. Also, the head of the IRA office that oversees tax-exempt status applications says she did not break the law, but that's all Lois Lerner would say at a House hearing on IRS targeting of conservative groups. She pled the fifth as expected. We'll keep an eye on these news stories. But we are also jump-starting summer today with a look at the musician who wrote the soundtrack for so many summers, Prince. Our guest is Touré, co-host of MSNBC's The Cycle and a columnist for Time.com. In his new book, I Would Die For You, Why Prince Became an Icon, Touré makes the case that Prince was an icon for Gen X and takes the reader through the various stages of the cultural cross he says Prince helped his generation carry. They were more than any previous generation children of divorce. They were sexually active in the age of AIDS, the first in which mixed race was common. First video generation, and by the way, a warning, a lot of that video was pornography. And Touré says Prince was their guide through all of this. He joins us from NPR in New York. Touré, welcome back to Here and Now.
Thank you for having me once again.
Well, describe again this generation that you're talking about, born between 65 and 82.
Yeah, I mean, we were a generation that was shaped by divorce, by latchkey kids, which is not necessarily the same thing. A lot of women went into the workforce for the first time. Some latchkey kids are from divorce. Some latchkey kids are from two-career families. But divorce had a massive impact on our generation. Also, the rise of what I call porn chic, because, of course, in the late 70s and early 80s, the VCR, which had actually been created in the 50s, became suddenly this very popular device that almost everybody had. That was driven by the making of low-cost pornography tapes. So instead of people going outside of their homes to watch pornography, which necessarily stigmatized it, people were able to watch pornography at home. And so it started to become part of popular culture in this way. I mean, even in a film like Empire Strikes Back, right, you see Princess Leia at the feet of Jabba the Hutt, right? Remember in the gold bikini with the chain?
Where are you going here?
And a lot of young boys were blown away by that image. So in this way, you see pornography, right, sort of entering the mainstream. And Prince was perfectly positioned to take advantage of that.
She took me to her castle and I just couldn't believe my eyes. She had so many devices, everything and money could buy. She said, sign your name on a dotted line. The lights went out and Nikki started to grind.
The song Darling Nikki, laced with sexuality, as was Prince. But just hold up a second there, Touré, because you've said a lot here. You admit that a lot of what you know about Prince and a lot of what we know about Prince is mythologized. So when you see a lot of Gen Xers relating to his family situation, we know that his parents separated when he was seven. He was said to have gone to live with his father. His father maybe kicked him out. We don't know what's true, but with what you can figure out what is true of his family, how do Gen Xers relate to that?
When he talks about strange relationships, or in a song like When Doves Cry, the way that he's talking about mom, dad, you know, there's clearly tension there. He's speaking in a way that if you have come from a broken home or a home that came close to divorce, that relates to you, that speaks to you. You know, a previous generation might have spoken more about, you know, I always loved my mama and, you know, daddy's so great and You know, and that's fabulous, but that may not have fit or might have seemed quaint if you're coming from a generation where, well, my parents broke up and, you know, my friend's parents broke up and that had a big impact on our lives, or my uncle and aunt broke up and then my, you know, my cousin came to live with us and I just saw that tension. Prince is speaking to us about our experiences, and whether or not we know that he had those similar experiences is immaterial.
So you're showing us how your generation related to Prince on these different levels. Another thing that was perhaps unique about the Generation X teens, they had their own telephones. What did that have to do with their relationship with Prince?
I remember it became quite normal that there would either be a second phone or, you know, some people had in their homes like that really long cord. So you're able to have conversations away from your parents. And what are teenagers talking about all the time? If not sex itself, then potential partners, or talking to the partners they want, or talking to their friends about the partners they want. So the phone privacy that emerges from the beginning of the 70s to the end of the 70s allows more of us to sit around and talk about who we want to be with and how we might make that happen.
I keep your picture beside my bed.
Well, one of the things they also might have been talking about is, what do you think of Prince? What do you think Prince is? Does he like men or does he like women? I mean, he played sexual androgyny. Yeah.
Yes, a lot of them might have been talking about Prince and or Michael Jackson and or Madonna, because there were fewer radio stations than we have now. There was no internet, obviously. There was MTV, which functioned as the biggest radio station in America. An album would come out, a lot of people would buy it, and you would have a community of people to talk about stuff with. We don't really have that now. There is no equivalent to MTV. Social media does not function in a way to create instant community around music. It's not that an album comes out and everybody is aware of it in the same way that MTV would make everybody aware of it at the same time. And it wasn't even like, are you listening to Prince? It was, what do you think of that new Prince album? What do you think of the new Prince single, Prince video? And this existed for, not just for Prince, obviously, for Michael, for Madonna, you know, for Bruce, and, you know, for some others, you know, U2 perhaps. So there were people who were able to create big, huge tents, and it is much, much, much harder now.
As Ture, his new book is I Would Die For You, Why Prince Became an Icon. We're jump-starting summer with a longer music break. We'll have more in a minute, here and now. It's Here and Now. We are taking a pre-summer musical break, talking to cultural commentator Ture about his new book, I Would Die For You, Why Prince Became an Icon.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to get through this thing called life. Electric word, life, it means forever, and that's a mighty long time. But I'm here to tell you, there's something else. The afterworld. A world of never-ending happiness.
Ture says Prince played sort of wise older brother to Gen X kids marked by their parents' divorce. Latchkey kids born between 1965 and 82.
So when you call up that shrink in Beverly Hills, you know the one. Doctor, everything will be all right.
Prince defied traditional categories of gender and sexuality, as Gen X kids were viewing both in a new way. And Ture, you say he also did that with race?
Gen X was a period when you had more sort of biracial knowledge than we'd had before. More whites interested in and aware of black culture and vice versa. So you had, you know, Spike Lee movies, Eddie Murphy becomes a gigantic star. There was crossover. For the first time, it was not embarrassing or sellout-ish to be crossing over from, you know, black communities or black cultural communities into white, and was not strange for whites to know a lot about black culture. So, you know, years later, the sort of children of this become like, you know, the people who make like the Chappelle Show, which is built on a black guy who knows a lot about white culture and a white guy who knows a lot about black culture, as well as their own cultures. What Prince and Michael Jackson did was they said, I don't want to be just famous within the black community. I want the world. I want everything. And Prince really attacked it in an interesting way, because there was actual segregation within the music business at that point. If you were a black artist, you would go into the urban department, right, which would typically be have a smaller budget, have a smaller staff, and would try to promote you to Soul Train, Black Radio, these sorts of things. You know, if you were a white star, they would put you with the pop staff, which would be bigger, have a bigger budget, and would try to get you the whole world. Prince came in and he said to the labels, do not try to just put me with the urban group. I want the world. I want to be with the pop staff. I'm going to make rock and roll as well as soul, as well as funk, as well as all these sort of things. So I don't want to just go to Soul Train. I don't want to just open up for Rick James. I want to be on Dick Clark. I want everything. And part of that push was that he told us that he was mixed. He is not mixed. His parents are both black. And it's not about a rejection of blackness. This music is extraordinarily black. His affect is extraordinarily black. But just to say, you know, just to create a bit of mystery, that was not quite a normal-ish thing in the 80s. And also to say, don't just sort of lump me with all the other black artists. I want the world.
Well, speaking of which, the song Purple Rain, which is so spiritual for so many, came from that same place, you say. It was because Prince's 1990 tour followed Bob Seger's tour through America, and he saw Seger have these huge crowds and stadium crowds, and he wanted that. And he wrote the song to get that response.
He wanted that sort of anthemic arena power ballad. It's a song about redemption. And Prince is absolving the speaker, saying, you know, that you are not a bad person. This relationship is ending. You had the best of intentions, and, you know, you did the best you could. And then in the last verse, he almost comes out and says it. There's this religious thing to him, but it's more than just being a person in the pews. He's either thinking that he is behind the pulpit or, you know, in the stained glass itself is thinking like he is, you know, the second coming of Jesus or something. So in the third verse of Purple Rain, he talks about you want a leader. You know, you can't make up your mind. You need to close it and let me guide you to the purple rain, rain, of course, being a baptismal symbol. Water is quite often a baptismal symbol. So if he's leading you, close your mind and follow me into the purple rain. Either he is John the Baptist or he is Jesus. I don't want to be some kind of friend.
This resonates, again, as you say, with your generation, the most secular, the generation with less religious engagement than any before. You cite Pew Forum polls to say that. Is this where it gets a little bit dangerous? It's one thing to think, as Prince does, you quote all sorts of scenes where he's talking about how the music is coming through him and he just can't stop writing it and he feels he's this vessel, and becoming somewhat messianic. I mean, tell us more about that, how this intersects with Gen X.
Well, I think that Prince wants to present himself in this sort of Jesus mode. I don't think that Generation X was looking at him as a Jesus figure to follow, but it was a period of declining religious engagement for Gen X. But, you know, I think the spiritual impulse is natural, right? That we all feel it, even if we don't go to church, we need something. And, you know, there were a lot of people who were following, worshiping celebrity at another level. And when you have Prince as this massive celebrity, you know, who's sort of feeding your sexual needs and also giving you this sort of spiritual, religious thing, it's a very seductive cocktail.
should have closed my eyes when you drove me to the place where your horses run free. 'Cause I felt a little ill when I saw all the pictures of the jockeys that were there before me.
If he is sort of the soundtrack of your generation, Gen X, we know he's putting out new songs on his website. He's on tour. What is he representing for you now?
He can't mean the same to us as he did when we were growing up with him. It's impossible because, you know, there were communities, there was, you know, identities being formed around him and what he was saying. At this age, it's good music. It reminds you of what you loved, but it can't be the same.
That's Touré. His new book, I Would Die For You, Why Prince Became an icon for his generation, Gen X. And Touré, I have to say, it was the details. It was so much fun to read, for instance, that he's a great basketball player, but has at times played in high heels.
Yeah.
We'll have an excerpt at hearnow.org. Touré, thanks as always.
Thank you.
And by the way, we want to introduce a new voice to Here and Now. She's going to be sitting in for me frequently because I'm going to get a knee taken care of. Meghna Chakrabarty.
I wore my beret since you're talking about Prince.
How appropriate. Meghna, I'm going to take a second to tell you the secret of doing this show. Oops, out of time.
The secret is do what Robin does.
Meghna, welcome.
Thanks so much, Robin.
Here and Now is a production of WBUR Boston in association with the BBC World Service and PRI. I'm Robin Young. Join us again here and now.